Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 615. I'm Amy Matheny, and I hope everybody is staying warm and safe and finding some fun libations or fun theater or fun days for game nights at friends' house, because inside is about where you want to be these days. We have had more snow in the month of February, they said, than in history, breaking all kinds of numbers. It's been cold here. It's been snowing in my home state of Tennessee. They don't quite know what to do with it. Even snowing in Georgia to the tune of 5 to 6, 8 inches all throughout the South. So we're having the same weather as my Southern friends and family. Just because it's cold outside, it can stay warm in our hearts and we can enjoy each other. And I have to say, Mitchell Fain, who is not on the show this week, but he and I have been having event television, meaning I want to be there when it comes on, the second it comes on, watch it with him. Thank God for DVR so I can rewind and watch scenes and lines and songs over and over again. But we are obsessed with Empire. If you are not watching this show, I don't know what you're doing, because you need to be watching it. It is hot, hot, hot. It is the right blend of a nighttime soap with a musical show in the vein of like Nashville or Glee. It has attitude, it has great zing and verve, it has amazingly sexy men and women on the show, and of course, what does it have more than anything? The diva to end all divas in Cookie. I truly think Cookie now is becoming like one of the most iconic characters in, will be one of the most iconic characters in television history, and somebody just give Taraji Henson an Emmy Award now. But it's really extraordinary, and one of the other things it's doing, which I feel like, well, besides shooting in Chicago, which is great, I do know some Chicago actors who've gotten work on the show. Hopefully they'll start using more and more. It's also executive produced by Eileen Chaykin, who was the executive producer and writer on The L Word and creator of that show. But it is also directed by Lee Daniels, African-American, openly gay film director, his foray into television. And if that wasn't enough, it is really dealing with LGBT characters on the show. And of course you would when you have a director and an executive producer who are both queer. But it's really something extraordinary. They are exploring being gay in African-American culture, issues with father and son. One of it's Empire is about a man who runs a hip hop empire, and his three sons, kind of King Lear-esque. He has a fatal illness. He has ALS. We find out in the first episode, and it's, you know, basically a power play between the three sons as to who is going to really carry on the legacy of their father. And the middle child happens to be gay. And we definitely get to see this dynamic between the father and the son. And, you know, it's a really, really, really beautiful relationship that just feels really honest between the other brothers. It's something that we haven't really seen. And I feel like in so many ways, and at the same time, the show is fluff. It's fluff. It's fun. But then it has these moments that really speak so true and seem so real. It's balancing a lot of things so amazingly well to be fun and also impactful. And I think his name is Jesse. I think that's how you pronounce it. It was with a U. Jesse Smollett, who plays the mid-son. Timbaland is doing all the music. But it's really amazing the portrayal that he's doing of the son. And I don't know, if you haven't watched it, you know, the Jamal story is really a powerful one for people of color, for gay men, and a story that's not been told. And they have amazing cameos, like Jennifer Hudson is coming on. I think they've had Courtney Love on, Gladys Knight's been on, Patti LaBelle is coming on. I mean, it's Rita Ora is going to be on. I mean, who doesn't want to be on this show? OMG. I am loving it so, so much. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. So if you're not watching it, it's queer on so many levels. So go watch on demand, go back, catch up, because this is a show you're going to want to be watching. This is a show you're going to be listening to as well, as we go and look at a story with a guest that was on our show a few years ago, 3 years ago, when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. We had the pleasure and privilege of having Lee Reinhart with us here on the radio to try to kind of give us some insight as to what it means to be a gay service member, what his story has been in so many ways. LGBT service members' stories have similarities, and then they're also unique because they're different arms of the service, different levels in which, you know, what your status is in military service, and just because everything was so nebulous and subjective when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was enforced, by the very nature of it, there was something you know, not concrete. So there's a lot of different stories. Lee's is one of them, and he has been gracious enough to share his with us here on the show. And we're back to check in with him again. He has just come back from service and is now president of the Chicago chapter of the American Veterans for Equal Rights. And so you can talk a little bit about that. And also just like, where are we with the military here 3 years later? And it's going to be fantastic to catch up with him. And also, there's an opportunity for you to help lend your support to our LGBT veterans who have been protecting our freedoms. And that's a great thing to be able to do today, knowing that so many are able to now finally serve openly and always they've served proudly, but openly and proudly. So also, what else is going on in the LGBT news and theater and much, much more? Lee Reinhart on the show today. So we'll be back after this.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News.
Kate Brown became the highest-ranking openly LGBT person to hold office in the U.S. on February 18th when she was sworn in as governor of Oregon. Brown, who was Oregon's Secretary of State, assumed the office after Governor John Katzhaber resigned after he and his environmental consultant fiance, Sylvia Hayes, were accused of ethics violations.
U.S. Representative Mike Honda, the Democrat from California, has opened up about his transgender granddaughter, Honda discussed his grandchild in a video at Courageous Conversation, a one-day symposium for superintendents and school leaders that focuses on how to make schools safer for their students.
Eric Fanning, who is openly gay, has been appointed the chief of staff for new Secretary of Defense Ash Carter. In June 2013, Fanning was named acting Air Force Secretary. At the same time, he became the highest-ranking LGBT person in the Defense Department.
On February 15th, Xander Mahaffey, a transgender freshman at South Cobb High School in Austell, Georgia, committed suicide. Like Leila Alcorn, the 15-year-old left a post on his Tumblr page beforehand in which he described how intolerable it was not to be accepted for who he was. Mahaffey's final request wasn't honored, as his obituary and tombstone used only his birth name, Sandra Nicole, and female pronouns, causing an outcry on social media.
The Labor Department announced that married same-sex couples will soon be eligible for benefits under the Family and Medical Leave Act, even if they live in a state that doesn't recognize their union. A new rule is said to be final that would ensure individuals in same-sex marriages have access to federally protected leave from work to care for spouses with serious medical conditions. Benefits take effect March 27th.
Republicans on an Indiana Senate committee didn't wait for the Democratic members to arrive February 18th before pushing through a proposal critics say would allow people and businesses to refuse services for same-sex weddings because of religious beliefs. The full state Senate may vote very soon on approving the proposal, which supporters say is modeled after a federal religious freedom bill President Clinton signed into law in 1994.
The U.S. Navy officially approved the request of transgender individual Paula Neira, filed in March 2014, for a name change on what's known as a DD-214, the military form that veterans present as proof of service whenever they apply for jobs or a variety of veteran benefits and services. Approval of Neira's name change was a first for the military branch. Neira served in the Navy under a different name, but underwent gender reassignment surgery in 1995 after leaving the service.
The Texas Supreme Court has issued an emergency order blocking gay couples from obtaining marriage licenses after a lesbian couple wed in Austin. The couple requested the license in Travis County 2 days after a local judge ruled in an unrelated estate case that Texas's gay marriage ban was unconstitutional.
Jeb Bush, a possible 2016 Republican presidential hopeful, is hiring an openly gay man as his top communications aide. Tim Miller, age 33, is currently executive director of the American Rising Political Action Committee, or PAC. Bush has not formally announced his candidacy, so Miller would, for now, be senior advisor.
The University of Colorado, or CU, expects to soon begin covering the cost of transition surgery for transgender faculty and staff. CU Boulder students in the university's health care insurance plan already receive coverage for such surgery up to $10,000.
An Oklahoma bill to punish any local or state employee who issues his marriage licenses to same-sex couples will be heading to a vote in the state House of Representatives after a committee approved the legislation. The bill, called the Preservation of Sovereignty and Marriage Act, is one of several in the Republican-dominated state house to impose restrictions on same-sex marriages that have been proposed after a U.S. federal judge last year ruled the state's ban on same-sex marriage was unconstitutional.
Detroit-area pediatrician Dr. Vesna Roy refused to see a baby because the parents are lesbians. Jamie and Krista Contreras of Oak Park brought their 6-day-old baby to Eastlake Pediatrics in Roseville for a checkup. However, Roy refused to see them. Under current Michigan law, a doctor has an absolute right to refuse medical treatment on the basis of sexual orientation, said legal analyst Charlie Langton. The situation happened last October, but the parents decided to go public with their story to raise awareness about discrimination against same-sex parents.
In Wyoming, a bill that would ban discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity cleared a critical committee hearing and now heads for a vote in the full state House of Representatives. Same-sex couples in Wyoming gained the right to marry last year only through federal court action. The bill has cleared the Senate and recently cleared the House Labor, Health, and Social Services Committee.
In world news, in Cuba, a variant of HIV that is much more aggressive than other known forms of the virus has been documented. Patients infected with this new variant progress to AIDS so rapidly that they may not even know they are infected, with AIDS symptoms occurring within 3 years of infection. If a person contracts multiple strains of HIV, typically by engaging in unprotected sex with multiple infected partners, then these strains can recombine into a new variant of HIV within the host. The new Cuban variant of HIV is one such recombinant version of the virus.
Secretary of State John Kerry has selected an openly gay career foreign service officer to serve as the U.S. heart and conscience in promoting equality for LGBT people in countries where there is extensive discrimination. Randy Berry, currently consul general in Amsterdam, would be the first special envoy for LGBT rights.
The Chilean government has agreed to drop its opposition to marriage rights for same-sex couples in a lawsuit filed with the Inter-American Court of Human Rights. The administration of former President Sebastián Piñera argued against the new definition of marriage in a brief filed in the case in 2013.
In an unprecedented move on February 18th, the Vatican gave a group of gay Catholics VIP seats at Pope Francis's weekly general audience. The 50 pilgrims from the U.S. sat front and center in St. Peter's Square, but were only identified on the list of attendees as a group of lay people accompanied by a sister of Loreto.
Greece's new left-wing government has promised to grant same-sex couples legal status in response to a 2013 international court decision condemning the country for discrimination. Civil partnerships were first legalized in 2008.
A Swiss legislative panel has voted overwhelmingly in favor of same-sex marriage. The Legal Affairs Committee recommended the National Council adopt a parliamentary initiative called Marriage for All. The initiative calls on the legislature to open marriage to same-sex couples as well as registered partnerships to opposite-sex couples.
In entertainment news, international music superstar Ricky Martin has been named executive producer and the first judge to be revealed for Univision Television's music-based reality entertainment competition, La Banda, set to premiere in September. The show will focus on finding the ultimate Latino boy band through the largest talent search in U.S. Hispanic TV history.
Oscar winner Marissa Tomei is set to play Gloria Steinem in Ms., a miniseries co-starring Kathy Najimy that is currently in development at HBO, with Steinem herself as a consultant on the project. Bruce Cohen of Silver Linings Playbook is executive producing along with George Clooney, Marissa Tomei, and Kathy Najimy. The miniseries will examine the creation of Ms. magazine in 1971 through the eyes of the women who founded it and the early days of the women's movement.
Openly gay personality Terry Sweeney was nowhere to be seen during NBC's recent Saturday Night Live 40th anniversary special. The only openly gay male cast member in the 40-year history of Saturday Night Live, now 64, impersonated Nancy Reagan, Joan Collins, and Diana Ross.
The U.S. Postal Service will honor Maya Angelou, the late author, poet, actress, and champion of equality, with a forever stamp.
Glee star Darren Criss will replace John Cameron Mitchell in the Broadway production of Hedwig and the Angry Inch for a 12-week run starting April 29th.
Openly gay Michael Sam will participate in ABC's Dancing with the Stars. Sam is not currently on an NFL roster. The free agent defensive end has been out of work since being released by the Dallas Cowboys from their practice squad last season.
American Horror Story freak show actor Ben Wolfe died following an accident last week. He was 34. The actor, who portrayed Meep on the FX popular series, was hit by a car mirror at the intersection of Hollywood Boulevard and Gramercy Place in the Hollywood portion of Los Angeles.
And Kristen Stewart became the first U.S. actress to win a César at France's most prominent film awards. Stewart won Best Supporting Actress for her co-starring role in Cloud of Sils Maria, which also stars Juliette Binoche and Chloe Grace Moretz.
And that's the Week in News brought to you by Windy City Times.
He calls a singer, goes on singing like a song is her best friend.
Hi, this is Linda Etter, and you're listening to Windy City Queercast.
Is the rainbow's end?
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get
For the week of March 2nd, 2015, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Steppenwolf Theater presents Marie Antoinette, a modern take on the young Queen of France, called an unconventional, bitingly comic play, a jagged yet elegant historical rip by Time Out New York. Tickets on sale now. Get your seats at steppenwolf.org.
Lifeline Theater continues its 32nd season of Big Stories Up Close with One Came Home, a world premiere adaptation of Amy Timberlake's award-winning coming-of-age novel. One Came Home plays Thursday through Sundays through April 5th. Tickets and more at lifelinetheater.com.
The Broadway smash hit and classic musical comedy La Cage aux Folles is now at the Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire, playing through March 29th. Feathers get ruffled and households upended in a poignant tale of one family's struggle to stay together, stay fabulous, and above all else, stay true to themselves. Visit MarriottTheater.com for tickets and more.
Don't miss the American premiere of the scandalous play The Glass Protégé, a tale of forbidden gay love affair between two male movie stars in 1940s Hollywood, brought to you by Giant Cherry Productions and Glitterati Productions. Tickets available now at theaterwit.org. The Glass Protégé is playing now through March 29th.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
When your legs don't work like they used to before, and I can't sweep you off of your feet, will your mouth still remember the taste of my love? Will your eyes still smile from your cheeks? Darling, I we'll be loving you till we're 70. And baby, my heart could still fall as hard at 23. And I'm thinking about
local Chicago chapter of the American Veterans for Equal Rights have their sights set on a memorial, and now they are moving forward with a monument to LGBT military service. The installation in the Abraham Lincoln National Cemetery will occur this May. And, you know, it's been a while since I have spoken to our guests, and a lot has changed in just a few years. I'm speaking of former radar man, second class from the Coast Guard and Operations Specialist in the Navy, and now logistics specialist second class in the Navy Reserves, none other than Lee Reinhart, who is the chapter president of the American Veterans for Equal Rights here in Chicago. And we talked a few years ago, right after Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. And he has just come back from Afghanistan in the past year, and is, you know, really a key person in this campaign to get the memorial established and the monument built. And so I'm happy to catch up with Lee. Hey, how are you, Lee?
Hey, Amy. Long time no chat.
Long time no chat. And I mean, we had talked before the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Then we talked right after the repeal. And I believe at that time, 3 years ago, you were constantly on the phone back and forth trying to see how you got reinstated and how you got back in to active duty. Can you just remind folks of kind of where you were right before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, and then what happened to you right after?
Well, I was, for a brief summary, I served openly in the Navy in the 90s. I was very fortunate. I was, you know, back then it was pretty much, you know, the law was in place. It was very subjective. You could be on one command to another. And luckily for me, on the command I was on, I was able to serve, and I was able to serve openly to most of my crew members.
And that was on a boat. We should just say, because a lot of people talk about how it's hard, and the few people heard what I said. You were Coast Guard and you were Navy, so this is out at sea. You're saying that the guys and gals on your boat knew you were gay, including your superiors.
That's correct. That was in the late 90s, and as I've always said, when I've told my story 100 times over, that I know I was one of the lucky ones. I was very blessed, and I wouldn't be here without those straight brothers that I've served with that allowed me to serve. And I was just very fortunate, and I understand that. So I got out in 99, and then the events of September 11th, I decided I wanted to give back one more time, and I chose to go into the Coast Guard. But unfortunately, it wasn't the same, and I was discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell soon after joining the summer of that year. So
how did people know that? I mean, when you say people knew you were gay, were you just talking about your boyfriend, or you just, what was different? What was different about the climate in terms of how you would have, quote unquote, come out after 9/11 and how you came out before?
I think what was different, Amy, was before when I served in the Navy, I reported my ship, and I became friends with the guys first, and they got to know me, and I came out one by one, and then later on, as they got to know me, as I was accepted and I felt comfortable, it got to the point by my third year on the ship that I felt comfortable to be completely out. Unfortunately, in the Coast Guard, I didn't have that option or that choice. Mm-hmm. I basically met another gay person on the ship. Well, that's the only thing we had in common. We were both happened to be gay. And then we took some female crew members with us to a gay bar in Portland, Oregon. And they came back, talked about a wonderful time they had out with us that night. Mm-hmm. And that's all it took. And an investigation started, and that led to my ultimate discharge under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So I wasn't given the time to build friendships, and it was a very short-lived experience.
And so did you then immediately start being a person who was championing LGBT veterans and people who had been discharged? How did you become kind of an activist, so to speak?
I wish I could say I was. I wish I could take credit for that, but I did not. I did not really become. I came home in late 2002. Kind of felt like it was over. There wasn't much I could do or much I could change. Change it. But it wasn't until I moved to Chicago in 2006, and I met members of AVER, American Veterans for Equal Rights, and that I now have the honor to be the president of. I met members of AVER. I've worked with groups, LDN and Human Rights Campaign and Equality Illinois. And we began to work those, 2006, we started, that I got involved. And it wasn't until 2011 until it was over. So years of, collecting petitions, going to D.C., talking to leaders. So it wasn't, for me, it wasn't until 2006, but it was, it was a wonderful journey. Not as long as so many others, and that have fought for so long. And for them, they're not able to take advantage of the repeal, but they were able to. They were part of the journey, and they led the path.
Did you find that your story was not unique? That people had been able to serve fairly openly, and then something changed in the 2000s.
Well, I don't think my story was unique at all. I just think that every person before the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, whether it was before 2000 or whether it was during the 90s, you took a risk. Mm-hmm. No matter what command you went through, you took a risk. And to give you a brief example of that, my best friend who I still serve with, before he came to my ship in the late 90s, his previous command had him under investigation for being gay, and he survived that investigation. So then when he came to my ship, he saw how open I was. He couldn't understand it or believe that it was possible. So it was very confusing to him to come from what he was put through to see that nothing was happening to me. And that was the biggest problem with the law, that it was very subjective based on who was in charge of each command.
Yeah.
So, and unfortunately, when I went to the Coast Guard, I obviously got a commanding officer or an executive officer who obviously knew they had this law they could use, and they used it, and I was discharged. So
when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed, and around that time in which you and I were talking 3 years ago, How hard was it to get reinstated, to get back into the reserves? I know that when I would talk to you, you were like, I'm on the phone, although you were today too. So, but for different reasons probably today. But talk to me about, you know, what it took and what it has taken for LGBT service members to get back on active duty or in reserve duty.
It, basically how it worked for each individual case is for those of us that got to return. And I don't know the numbers, Amy. I don't think they're as great as we would like for those who were discharged and wanted to return because every case was handled differently. And I was fortunate enough to be one of, you know, I was a third in the nation, I'm told, to be able to get back in. So we don't know, but we also don't know, you know, those people, we don't, those are the people that we know in our activist movement that was part of the, to getting it repealed. But for me, it was a long process. Like you said, we were, 2011 was a very long year for me. I never knew if I would have a chance to come back in. I still knew it was the right thing to repeal the law for those that were currently serving, for those that want to come in the future to make sure they didn't have this over their heads. But I really wanted to serve myself as well. So I had to go through all the testing. I had to go through the medical testing just like a 19-year-old going in the military for the first time.
Yeah.
I know. And
was
so
that scary?
It was quite embarrassing and quite humbling experience to be, you know, I think I was 38, 39, and very humbling to have to go through that experience and with these 19-year-olds. And but to me, I wanted back in, and I had to go this process. So I did it. Well, all that was done, but then there was a delay in the process. And the biggest issue was, what was that, if I did come back in, what was I going to get to come back in as an E5, or were they going to take me all the way down to an E3?
And what does that mean for those of us who are stateside and don't know what that means?
It's a rank. So as you move up into the military, you move up in rank. Obviously, as you move up in rank, you move up in pay and seniority. So that's very important. So because I had been out for over 9 years at that point, technically by what's written in the books, they could have easily took me down from an E5 to an E3. So I would have came back in and lost basically two ranks. That's a lot of pay, a lot of seniority. So it'd be like I'd be punished again for something I had no control over and something that was, you know. So my recruiter was working very hard. I'll always give him credit. He was really trying hard to get me at least to come back in as an E4. But here's what I did, Amy. This is where you learn never to burn your bridges. So to me, it wasn't moving fast enough. And so I decided I was going to track down my old captain, who I had served with in the 90s, and I decided to track him down. He had retired a year prior to 2011 as a three-star admiral, as a vice admiral in the Navy. So here I am, an E5, if anybody knows military, tracking down a retired vice admiral in the military.
Wow.
I tracked him down in his civilian job. I left him a message, and didn't think he'd ever call me back because, you know, he had 30-plus years probably in the military. He wouldn't remember who I was. He only was my captain for 2 years. And but he, within a half hour, Amy, the gentleman called me back.
Wow.
So, and long story short, because I'd like to keep a lot of that to my, a lot of those moments, our conversation to myself, because it made me feel really good. Within 24 hours, the admiral had a letter written on my behalf. And I was able to get within, after that letter, things went quickly, and I was able to re-enlist in the Navy Reserves, and I got to keep my E5 status.
Wow.
So, and I have no doubt it was because of the letter that the admiral wrote for me on my behalf.
Wow.
So I was honored. We had a great conversation. We talked about a lot of things that I thought he knew I when I served under his command, and we clarified some things. And but after all that, the admiral still had a letter written for me on my behalf.
Wow!
So I was able to get back in, and we had a reenlistment here in Chicago at the mm-hmm. Center in Halstead mm-hmm. on the 24th of October in 2011, and it was a really awesome experience for me. We had several dignitaries there because I was the first one in Illinois to reenlist, so the Navy wanted to make sure it was all done right and proper.
Yeah.
So, it was a really, it was the most humbling part was that my family was there, and I was honored to have one of my former shipmates, who a guy I served with on my first ship in the Navy in the 90s, who was at the time, he was enlisted, and then he worked his way up and to be an officer, and he was still in the Navy when I reenlisted in 2011. He was a chief warrant officer. Uh-huh. So it was really cool to have someone from that first ship who I served with actually at my reenlistment. So it was really cool. So he came there as an officer then, so it was really cool.
Wow, what an extraordinary story. So all eyes are on you. What happened? Okay, you're reenlisted. What was your first assignment?
My first assignment, my reserve center is in Columbus, Ohio, because at the time, I think even when we last spoke, I was working for Quality Ohio in Ohio for a couple years, and my reserve center is still in Ohio. And I work, in Navy Reserves, but I work with a civilian organization out of Michigan. And within the first 6 months of my reserve time, I was given orders, and I would be deploying in January of 2013 to Afghanistan.
Okay. Wow. So you had a year.
I had a year stateside before I would be deployed.
Okay. And how long were you serving in Afghanistan, and what does a logistics specialist do?
Logistics specialist in the Navy encompasses several different jobs, because a few years ago, the Navy took a lot of their supply core jobs and combined it to one rate, which is a logistics specialist. Mm-hmm. And that could be a mail person. We used to have postal clerks in the Navy that did our mail, but we don't have that anymore. It's part of logistics specialists.
Okay.
So it encompasses, you could work in supply, you could work in the ship store, you could work as a haircutter, as a postal clerk. So logistics specialist kind of has covered a lot of different jobs. So when you're in the reserves, you get attached to a certain unit and you do a certain job based off of what your rate is. So for me, I'm attached to a civilian organization. And basically what I do is we stateside, all the different military units turn in their used property or property they don't use, and we make sure it either gets destroyed properly or resold to the correct, vendors. Mm-hmm. In Afghanistan, basically, we went from base to base, helped those bases get rid of the stuff they needed to get rid of, whether it be destroyed or sold. But in Afghanistan, it works much different. Obviously, we're selling to the locals there in Afghanistan, so a majority of the stuff that we sell has to be deemed scrapped. So basically it's destroyed where they can't use it as its intended purpose, mm-hmm. but then we sell it as scrap. And we also make sure, obviously we take pride in making sure that we don't let out items that are sensitive or could harm our fellow troops. So we want to make sure that things aren't loosely taken off the base that aren't supposed to. Mm-hmm. So it becomes very important over there, especially the last couple of years as the war has wind down, mm-hmm. these bases are closing and they're closing fast, but we want to make sure things are destroyed or sold properly.
Right. So you were there for how long? How long was that assignment?
I got on the ground in Afghanistan in April of 2013. Mm-hmm. I left in February of 2014.
And how would you describe the climate there, just in general, and also for you as now a newly reinstated openly gay service member?
Well, I have to tell you, for me, again, I was very fortunate to be in a command over there in Afghanistan that allowed me to serve very openly, even though we all can serve openly now. But some people are still, we're only a few years into this. So
right,
a lot of people
right.
that have careers have done a long years, and they're very, they only a few short years left of their career. They want to make sure, it's mm-hmm. good to go,
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I was very lucky once again to find a command that the majority of them were supportive. We it was quite funny. And where I was stationed in Kandahar, Afghanistan, which is a southern province, uh-huh. we had a Giddy support group that met every Friday night right okay. there on base.
Wow.
And right there and out in the open and the board, we called the boardwalk. It's where a lot of shops were, a lot of restaurants that we could hang out. Mm-hmm. And so we met every Friday night. It was in a mixture of all the branches, plus a mixture of civilian workers from all over the world, because we had civilian workers from, you know, from different parts of the world. And those happened to be as gay as well, joined our group.
Mm-hmm.
We had our first, the summer of 2013, we had our first gay pride event in a war zone in Kandahar.
Wow.
And it was quite interesting. We had a panel discussion. I was on the panel of four people. There was, most of us were enlisted, and then we had one female officer in the Army. She was an Army captain. Mm-hmm. And we told our stories. We had about 100 people attend, and it was made up of officers that attended. And we had a question and answer ceremony afterwards. Very powerful move.
Mm-hmm.
And a very difficult, very touchy-feely, and I don't know how much detail you need, but it was very hard to advertise for it. We had to change our advertising. For an example, we put on our first flyer, Afghanistan Pride.
Mm-hmm.
We were told it would offend some of the locals, so we couldn't use Pride or Afghanistan together because obviously the culture in the Middle East mm-hmm. towards LGBT, which was understandable, and we wanted to make sure we did that right. One of the biggest issues that we had, and it was very upsetting, was we had to have a sponsor to be able to do this event. So our unit had to sponsor us to do mm-hmm. the event.
Okay.
The person in charge of that unit felt it was not wise for us to put an American flag behind us on the podium.
Mm.
And that was very upsetting for all of us. So that was one of the hurdles we weren't able to overcome. And we wanted to make an issue about it, but we kind of sat back and realized, you know, what's the bigger point here? And the bigger point was that we're having a pride celebration
mm-hmm.
in uniform in a war zone on active duty. So we moved forward, and we were very fortunate for that. So I think after that, I've seen, you know, they've continued to have different things while they're over there serving, the ones that are still there serving. So it was really cool.
Now, tell me a little more about American Veterans for Equal Rights. What is the work that
sure.
they are doing now, and what about their work has brought about this idea for a monument here
mm-hmm.
In Illinois?
Well, American Veterans for Equal Rights, the national organization, is in its 25th year. And so American Veterans for Equal Rights was in the forefront of repealing, getting Don't Ask, Don't Tell repealed. Obviously, there's a lot of groups that we had to thank for getting it done, you know, across the board. But American Veterans for Equal Rights was one of the beginning groups in the forefront. For me, locally, when I took, like I said, when I came in 2006, I've met, this is how I, you know, got involved in getting it repealed, was also me going to my first meeting at the center in Halstead and meeting members of AVER. And I actually think the first member I met was Jean Albright. So, and then
uh-huh.
I got...
Who works with us at Windy City Media. She
yeah,
handles all our
yeah.
web publications and is the wife of Tracy Baim. So
and I'm
she's
pretty sure she
a vital
was the
person.
So she's a pretty important person, I
yeah.
know. And I'm pretty sure she was the first person. I was invited to an event, and she was there. And we have remained friends ever since. And then, obviously, I got to know Jim Darby and members of her, and heard their stories and what they, you know, what they, how they served and what they served under, the conditions they served under.
Mm-hmm.
And I got really involved in the group, and I was very honored when I got to reenlist. You know, a lot of the members were there at my reenlistment. One of the things that I said then, and I've always said now, is though I hope I'm fortunate. I'm one of the fortunate ones who get to serve again. And I hope my service honors all those who can't serve because of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you know, or wasn't allowed to maybe make the military their career because they were fearful or because of the law was in place. So I hope my service honors them.
Mm-hmm. I know it does. I'm sure it does.
Yeah, I hope it does. And, you know, that's what keeps me going some days, because it's not as glamorous as one might see. And when you've been out of the military for a long time, and to come back in, it's got its ups and downs. No regret, but definitely there's moments, you know, like any job, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what keeps me going. And
well, you're trailblazing in your teaching, and by example, you're showing, you know, everyone in the military that, you have an intention, you have a passion, you have a dedication to the military and to protecting and serving. And that at the end of the day, that's all that should matter, you know, and that's just going to take time, I think, for some people to just have the consistency of that message that I know you and many other, you know, openly gay and lesbian, bisexual service members are you know, being an example of today. Tell me about the monument. How did awesome. That happen? What are the details for that?
Well, so the monument, the most important thing here, enough about me.
I'm good to hear your story.
I'm getting some credit for this monument deal, and I don't deserve the credit, actually, because but I can tell you the scoop about it because it is very important. A few years ago, the members of AVER, really wanted to have this monument, felt it was time to have a monument put in place in a National Veterans Cemetery that would honor LGBT members exclusively and be put in a national cemetery. And they worked really hard. And one of our members, Stan, took the lead in this and worked really hard. So Stan, our member Stanley, deserves a lot of credit. And because it was not easy, because when you try to place something in a national veteran cemetery,
yep,
it's not like you can just say, hey, we want to do this, we'll pay this money and we want to do this. It's a lot of back and forth. And he spent three years solid on submitting different plans to the National Veterans Association, getting it approved by, you know, all these different members. You know, it's been in the hands of, you know, Congressman Quigley, and he wrote letters to, I think Senator Durbin was involved. I know Senator Durbin was involved. Even Senator Mark Kurt was involved in the, you know, the, mm-hmm. we were letting them, they were all part of this process to get it. And it was very difficult to do, you know, and all the way down to the specific language that we, mm-hmm. that we could use in the monument. Mm-hmm. And, so different versions went back and forth. The cemetery changed hands and leadership, so that caused a lot of delays. But in November, we got word that it was finally approved, and we can move forward, and we are going to hopefully get this thing installed. We are going to get this thing installed on Memorial Day of this year, May 25th.
Wow. And how are you making sure it's not cheap? I know. So, well, first of all, let's do that first. So, how much are you trying to raise? I know you just had an Indiegogo campaign. There will be another opportunity, but real easy way, no matter when you're listening to this podcast, is to mail a check. So how much are you trying to raise, and how can people, mail a check? What are the details on who it's made out to and where to mail it?
Awesome. Well, the total cost is around $20,000.
Okay.
And we had to make a down payment to get, there's timelines we have to meet to make sure we can get it done and installed by May 25th. So, like I said, the cost is $20,000. We've already put down our first sticks to make them, you know, to get the initial process started and get the granite and all the stones ordered. So we are, you know, we're in the process of raising that other $14,000. So mm-hmm. that's where, and we do have the campaign that we had running during the Christmas break on Indiegogo. And we're also obviously taking donations through checks to mail at our post office box in Chicago. So
that's made out to American Veterans for Equal Rights?
Yes, it's made out to American Veterans for Equal Rights. And on the memo line of their check, all they need to do is put monument fund.
Okay.
So that way, because we are, you know, a non-profit, so if they want to use it for their taxes, you know, we can mail them a receipt for their donation.
Mm-hmm.
So then we know that's important to a lot of our donors, so we want to make sure that we get that done for them. So we obviously, like I said, we put $6,000 down, and we needed another $14,000. We have raised some funds there, but we're still a long ways to go
yep.
to get that $14,000. So And what's important
about... Where can we mail that to, the P.O. Box?
Okay. Yep, the P.O. Box. I have it right here. Do you want me to give it to you?
Yeah. We'll put this in our show notes.
Awesome. Thank you. Basically, it's American Veterans for Equal Rights, and it can be mailed to Post Office Box 29317. That's 29317 in Chicago, 60629. So the zip code is 60629 for our post office box. And just make sure that they put in there, from the line of the check, that it's a donation for the Monument Fund. So,
fantastic. How will you assess? Well, first of all, is there somebody who designed the monument? And then two, how do you find, are you looking for names of all the people that you want to, will the names be on the monument, or will it be something that it can be added to? $20,000 doesn't sound like that much to me. So I'm kind of asking, like, what is the idea for the monument?
The monument itself, nothing else can be added. So no names can be added. And one of the best examples would be, like, you know, if we had someone that gave a lot of money, oftentimes when someone gives a lot of money, they want their name somewhere on that item, correct?
Yep.
Well, unfortunately, in this predicament, that cannot happen. So what the picture of the monument and the words on the monument cannot be changed, or nothing can be added, because it is a government facility and they have strict regulations, just like they have strict regulations on the size on the monument. So we are going to go alongside the other monuments that currently exist in this cemetery.
Perfect.
And we had to make sure the measurements were the same. For us, though, however, ours will look just most of the monuments there, to the best of my understanding, is pretty much a square box. Ours has a little bit of design to it, which will a little different, so we'll obviously stand out some. But they approved that. So we're very fortunate that ours will stand out just a little bit different than the majority of them. But there's very strict requirements on what – that was the biggest issue. For example, the wording was very well checked over and over again, and our original wording was something to the effect, from the beginning of time, LGBT people have served. Mm-hmm. Well, the bigwigs who were approving this did not like that idea from the beginning of time, because we would hate to admit that there was homosexuals from the beginning of time, you know. Uh-huh. So we were not allowed to go with that. So we had to change it to help, you know, make sure we wanted to get it approved. So we wanted to make sure, you know, that we chose a language that everyone could agree upon. So that was one of the changes. And that took a lot of time for Stan and the group to have to go back and forth to see what they were going to go with and stuff like that. So, like I said, Stan, one of our members, really stuck through this process. It was not easy to have to go through these letters back and forth, and Congressman Quigley was a big help, and I also, like I said, I know Senator Durbin was involved, and I'm not sure how much Mark Kirk was, but I know that he's aware of it and Steph was aware of it as well. So,
well, it's an amazing, amazing thing, and we'll definitely talk about it in May when we come up to Memorial Day. What a wonderful thing that the Chicago chapter and Illinois in general will have this in our backyard and in our state. You know, the state of Lincoln and at the Abraham Lincoln National Cemetery. It's fantastic. Tell me, as we just have to wrap up here, what work is left to be done in the military for LGBT people to feel that they have their equal rights and that they feel, you know, a part of? Where are the hurdles and what still needs to be done?
Well, there are many hurdles, and I'll address a couple of them. Our first one, obviously, is clear to all of us, our transgender brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
So we clearly left them out while we were working on the repeal. Mm-hmm. Could we have done it differently to make sure they weren't? I'm not sure, you know, but the reality is we left them out, and they want nothing more to be able to serve and serve openly as well, just like I did. And like I said, I'm one of the lucky ones to get a serve, and I got to make sure that we can do whatever we can to work towards a day where our transgender brothers and sisters can serve as well. We all know, like we all knew there was LGBT people serving. We know there's transgender brothers and sisters that are still serving today, but have to serve in the closet and not be able to be truly who they are without fear, you know, of being discharged or having issues. So clearly that is what we must tackle. But I also, I don't want to make light of the fact that, yes, we no longer have Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and we won't be able to be kicked out for being gay. But remember, we're still a military that many of our leaders is an older generation that served under, you know, served for a long time where they didn't have to deal with a lot of openly gay people. And they're still dealing with that. And a prime example would be the commanding officer that I served with in Afghanistan. He knew I was gay. He knew we were going to have this pride event. And when I invited him, he basically told me, I support you as a sailor. You're a hard worker. I'm going to treat you fairly, but I will not come to this event because I cannot support this part of you. For me, he was honest about it. He allowed me to serve. But once he told me that, at that point, I began to question, am I being judged differently? Whether it becomes the evals or whether it becomes a promotion, will I be judged differently? Because now I know you feel this way, you know? Mm-hmm. So we always, and I'm not saying he treated me differently or evaluated me differently, but those are the questions that we have. And we still have leaders in the military that will not be accepting of this issue. And so we will never know, you know, if an openly gay person is coming up for a promotion or needs a good eval, if they could be affected by that. You know? And I hope as time goes on, the majority of it will get better. So obviously we can serve openly and thankfully we can. And, you know, we can't go, I believe we have no, there's no way we're going backwards. We're always going forward. We'll be able to serve openly from here on out. And, but I think we still have a few years to work through some of the old timers and some of the ones that haven't been exposed to a lot of gay people as well. So that is still important to remember, if that makes sense to your listeners. But obviously the most important thing, like I said in the beginning, was we are not done. We're clearly not done, and we have to work for a better day for our transgender brothers and sisters that are currently serving and serving in silence, and those that, you know, the younger generation of transgender brothers and sisters that are looking at the military as an option, because to me, Amy, I mean, the military should be an option for all of us. And I'm grateful for my time in the military. And I think that should be an option for anybody that wants to be able and that is willing and wants to be able to serve their country.
Absolutely. Well, Lee, it's just amazing to catch up with you. And you're stateside now for a little while, now that you're home.
Yep, I'm stateside. Obviously, I talked to you earlier. I still have my reserve obligations. I just came off of 42 days on reserve duty, and I'm going right back to Ohio this weekend for. I have reserve duty every weekend and once a month in Ohio, and my current contract ends this October. I can't believe it's already been 4 years since my reenlistment. So I have some soul searching to do, whether I'll continue on or. This will be the end of my journey. So I have a feeling I'll continue on. I fought so hard to get back in, so why not continue on?
Absolutely.
And might be 42, but I'm still young, so I think I can continue on.
You better be young. You are young, and that's great. It's great. Well, I am very excited to have you on the show. Do not forget, folks, that you can... make a difference, help memorialize, make this monument happen here for Memorial Day. You can write a check to the American Veterans for Equal Rights and mail that in, make it out to them, and then mail it to P.O. Box 29317. That's Chicago, Illinois, 60629. Any amount will be greatly appreciated. And in that memo line, please put the monument fund. so they know and make sure the money that you send goes directly to the monument. And also they will send you a 501c3, you know, tax deductible letter saying that you have made a donation. So it's a win-win on all accounts, and I'm going to put my check in the mail, Lee, so I can support you guys.
And
I so appreciate you coming on the show and bringing us up to date. And hopefully we'll talk to you in the early summer, and there'll be a lot of excitement Memorial Day through June here. Across the U.S., but also in Illinois. So we'll hopefully get some images for the monument to post and get an update.
Awesome. Thank you. And a lot of people ask us, you know, what's the importance of this monument? And, you know, because we are, you know, we want to be treated equally and fairly. And why do we have to have a separate monument? But as we all know, there's monuments for all walks of life in different areas of our country to honor people for their service. And I think the best answer I can give is it's very important that we never forget those that have served, especially those who served in silence and who never were able to serve openly, like myself, and those behind us get to serve. And this, what fitting way to be able to finally put a monument that is exclusively for honor LGBT service members. And we'll never know out there in Abraham Lincoln Cemetery how many of those people that are, you know, are buried there that might happen to be gay. And that's okay, but it's very important for us to know, and for families who come there to visit their loved ones. And, you know, what powerful message would that give a sister or brother or a wife or a husband or a partner of someone who comes out to that cemetery and visits their loved one, and no one but that one person knew that that person that's buried there happened to be gay, and then that same person stumbled upon our monument and see a monument that is there, foreverly, permanently stationed there, and to honor all of them. And that means that their loved one who's buried there that no one ever knew served and happened to be gay is now honored. So I think that's the best answer I can give, because I do get that question a lot, especially from non-LGBT people, is why do we feel we have to have a monument? And I think that's why, you know, we can't forget. And that's a way that, as we all know, as time passes, a lot of things are forgotten. But when people see monuments, you know, they don't forget.
Yeah.
It's just like going to the Vietnam Wall in D.C., you know, and seeing the Vietnam for the first time. That wall's been there for many, many years, and every time someone walks by there, they're going to be reminded. So that's what's important to us here in Illinois, that our loved ones, our brothers and sisters who have fallen, are important just as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Lee Reinhart, thank you so much for being on with us. I hope all of you will support this monument fund, and we will have the address again in our show notes so you can write a check. And also, I just appreciate you giving us this insight because you have been, you echo a lot of stories, and so we just appreciate you being willing to share one of them with us of those men and women who have served and are currently serving, and those who will serve in the future. So thank you so much for your service.
Thank you, Amy.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everyone, have a great week. I hope that you will choose to contribute to the memorial. My check has already been mailed. Stamps on it, it's gone. It's gone its way. And I hope you will too. Even $10, $15, $25 or more, whatever you can do, let's help make this important and substantive. We want our LGBT veterans who have so often been silenced and oft neglected or not supported to feel the support of the community with this memorial in the great state of Illinois. So I hope that you will be willing to send a check of some amount to help them raise their final monument memorial dollars so that they can establish this outward invisible sign of dedicated service by our LGBT community. Everybody, have a great week. Mitchell Fain on the show more this month. Perhaps we will talk about Empire, because we can kind of talk about nothing else. And also, I will have to talk about House of Cards, because I'm going to try to get beefed up on it. Plus, there's a show called Angry Fags. That's the title of the show. And it's happening at Steppenwolf in their garage space with Pride Films and Plays. And I'm going to have the director of that show on the podcast here in just a couple of weeks. So good stuff happening this month. Maybe it'll warm up. That would be nice. Have a great week, everyone. Ta-ta. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.